BOAG World is brought to you by headscape.co.uk in association with getsignoff.com and the website Owner's Manual. In this week's show, we talk about overcoming stagnation, and Ed Merritt shares a technique to achieve fixed footers without the use of JavaScript.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul and Marcus.
Hello, and welcome first ever BOAGworld.com podcast.
BOAG World!
Hello, welcome to the 100th episode of BOAG World!
Hello and welcome to the 136th episode of BOAGworld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul BOAG.
That's going to be on your tombstone.
It is. I'm really fed up with saying it now, actually.
Oh, yes, and I'm Marcus, as ever.
It's almost got to this point now where, you know, if I'm at a conference or something, that people shout it at me, like they, you know, shout catchphrases at comedians.
Yeah.
Yes, not good. I think we need to change it.
Well, we probably should stop announcing what the number of show is as well, because it's just and so appropriately called Stagnation
this week.
It's like, oh, God, they've been going so long. How can they keep this up? Well, it's endless repetition. That's how we do it.
I'm really ready this week. After last week's, I feel like death warmed up. I'm really in the mood.
All I've got now is that kind of dry cough, you know?
Yeah.
I don't feel ill anymore.
I won't go into my evil phlegm. We'll leave that alone.
Evil phlegm.
So yesterday, I had a good day.
Yes.
I went down to Calsonified and sat on beanbags and contemplated the future of web design. I really did. That was my day yesterday.
Yeah, ooh, great.
That's what you do when you're a...
They're in Bath, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's just such a hippie city.
But it was really good. It was Mark Bolton there, and there was Steve Pearce from Poke. And who else was there? Oh, and Alan Rowe as well, who you know.
Yes. Hello, Alan.
So we had a really
good
day.
Not that he listens to this.
No, probably not, but not if he's got any sense. We had a really good day, but it did get a little pretentious, I have to say.
Yeah.
And we, as well as spending ages discussing should we be called web designers or interactive designers, and contemplating typography in far too much depth, we also got into a discussion about business cards.
And, that's cool, and but it depends kind of what.
Well, it was things like Mark pulled out his new business cards that are very nice, I have to say. Mm. And they're really thick. They're like 400 gram plus. And then Steve pulls out
I'm
his.
With you. 400, ooh.
Yeah, very nice. Steve pulls out his, and his are even thicker. And then they're three layers, so there's like a strip of green down the middle where it's like sandwiched together.
They'd be so expensive
to
make. I
know, obscene. But then Alan Rowe... beat everybody.
Trumped the lot.
He didn't bring out his own business card. He brought out a business card for scrunchup.com, right? Now, I want to pimp scrunchup.com anyway.
Okay.
This is Anna. You know Anna that does our helps with some of the technical side of BOAG World? So there's Anna, Jamie. You know Jamie and the Lion, Jamie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So these are like young designers just breaking into the field and looking to kind of... yeah, get going in the world of web design. So they set up something called scrunchup.com, and it's not launched yet, but what it basically is, it's a magazine aimed at people trying to break, young designers, you know, students and people like that, providing advice about best practice in web design, because they don't get taught it at school or university and things
like
that.
It's not for me, then.
No, definitely not. You're far, far too old. But yeah,
I'm old enough to be their dad, maybe even granddad. No, I'm not that old.
No, but certainly their dad. So, so it hasn't launched yet, but you can go and sign up for to be notified when it's live. Do that right now. Stop the podcast. Go, well, if you stopped it now, you won't hear this. Yeah. Go and sign up at scrunchup.com. But anyway, so Alan Rowe pulls out a business card for scrunchup.com. and this is typical Anna, right? Handcrafted.
Right.
So they're little envelopes with scrunchup.com written on them. And then they're little brown envelopes. So if you look at my Flickr feed, you can go and see them. And you open, you don't want to open it. It feels too precious to actually open this envelope. But Alan said, no, you've got to open it. So open it up and you pull out this piece of paper folded like a paper aeroplane. And you open it up and it's handwritten, a kind of description of what Scrunch Up is. Ultimate business card.
I don't know. Well, I used to be able to trump them because, as you know, Paul, I used to be in the paper industry.
Here we go. I've opened a can of worms now, haven't I?
Now, we used to do, they used to make some really cool papers, like metallic ones and all that kind of thing. And because you were basically selling the paper, you could go down to the print department and say, can I have 100 of these in this particular type?
Right.
And they'd just do it. And they'd be there next day, boom.
Oh, so yeah, but
have
nothing.
Like a whole wallet full of different business cards on sort of metallic and opalescent and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, but this is like handcrafted. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, okay.
But I tell you, I really like business cards. I've got a real thing. They really inspire me, really nice business cards. There was a thing on, guess what, Smashing Magazine.
Top 10 business cards.
Yeah, see, it was something like that. Inspirational business cards. And they were really gorgeous stuff that people do, you know. Mm. Must be immensely expensive, you know, to produce them. But anyway, very cool.
Yeah, they can be. But as you say, they particularly for someone who works for, who is a creative, they can say an awful lot. And people remember the card as well, not your name.
Well, I couldn't throw away that Scrunch Up one, even though I knew all the information on it. You know, I've had to shove it in my drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing you've got to keep, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there you go. So should we hurtle on to the news?
No, I've got to say.
Oh, right.
I've got to, because I always just talk about what I've been doing for the week, and it doesn't involve getting drunk or anything like that.
Last week. Yes.
I was mulling over with my friend and colleague, Mr. Scott, who was on this show about 100 years ago.
And refused to ever come back. Yeah.
That we're not getting any sales leads. And it's like, well, was everyone gone to sleep? I reckon in the last week, I've been getting about 10 a day.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just suddenly gone mad again. Because we were beginning to
think... Everything's gone mental.
We were beginning to think like credit crunch time, weren't
we? Yeah, no.
We haven't talked about that on the show, you know, because there's a lot of talk at the moment about... You know, the state
la,
of the...
La, la.
Marcus is ignoring it. About the state of the economy and whether it's going to affect us as web designers. Because, I mean, traditionally speaking...
Of course it will. Yes, it will.
Okay. Well, that's the end of that discussion then. Oh, I thought we were going to go somewhere interesting with that.
It's going to affect all of us.
But the kind of perception is that, you know, in a recession, the first thing that gets hit is advertising and marketing.
Correct.
And that web design is advertising and marketing. But I would argue... Partly. Yeah, it's not entirely anymore.
No, it's informational.
And I think maybe, I wonder whether it's going to affect things like venture capitalists investing in, you know, web startups and stuff like that. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that from that point of view, there'll be a lot less money and activity going on for people investing in new businesses.
Mm.
But I can imagine that people with lots of money, it's not going to affect them at all.
Yeah.
And they'll probably see it as an opportunity to, you know, get all the crap will be weeded out for them because people will think, well, I've got no chance at the moment. So the really good ideas should come to the fore. So if you've got a really good idea and you need funding, then now's the time, I would say.
Mm,
it's like there are a load of people that work for Headscape at the moment that have been moaning about, oh, I can't get on the property ladder, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yippee.
Yeah.
House prices are coming down.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's not bad news for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I think the advice from a business point of view, certainly we've been getting, haven't we, is, you know, now's not the time to necessarily expand or take on big investments.
Don't get new offices,
for example.
Like that,
really bad idea at the moment,
Oops.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the news. Bugwrite.com. Okay, so let's talk news for the day. And we'll start off with actually a post from Mark Bolton, who I was talking about just moments ago.
You were.
And I met for the first time yesterday. Designed by committee, okay?
Don't we all love that?
We all love that, and we all know it sucks. But why? Why does it suck? Why is it that it always leads to disaster, pain, and misery?
Depends on the committee, though, on how big the committee is.
Ah, no, okay, go on. So do you think a big committee is better than a small committee? Or worse?
You need an odd number. Somebody has to have final say.
Right.
So if you like, it isn't committee at all, then, is it?
No.
What I'm saying is, yes, you can all have your say, but somebody has to be the chief.
Yes. Okay. Now, it's quite interesting because, you know, Mark is doing a redesign project for Drupal, which is an open source content management system. So open source.
Yeah, everyone gets their say.
Yeah. So he's really taken it to the absolute extreme and opened up the design process to the entire Drupal community.
Right.
Which is quite scary that he's done this.
I can't believe you can get any agreement on that at all.
Well, there are over 200,000 registered users. And so it's a significant community and not the kind of environment where you'd feel inclined to design in the open, really. And you would kind of think it was going to be a disaster. But at the moment, Mark is kind of cautiously optimistic, I think is probably the way. Mm. And is, you know, feels that there might be potential in this. And it, the key from his perspective is about scale.
Pardon me.
Right. Yes. Don't burp in the middle of the news.
It's because I'm coughing and all that, you know, you suck in air and all that kind of thing. Just, you know, I'm just, it's just still a bit sicky left over from last week.
I just don't want to know. So, yes.
You said, you brought it up.
I know, but you just said, pardon me. So you'd obviously
that's just
made it.
Polite, isn't it?
Yes, but, oh, shut up. So anyway, he says the key appears to be scale, right? So in design by committee, it's typically a handful of decision makers, right?
Yep.
And there are always one or two dominant individuals that overwhelm the others, the kind of alpha male. I've got a strong opinion and I'm going to express it until everybody listens to me. Mm. So it ends up creating an environment of conflict and then compromise. So, you know, you try and find a compromise, you end up with grey, bland design. However, with design by community, the sheer scale of the community drowns out anybody in particular, anybody that might have a dominant voice. And you move from an environment of kind of personal opinion to one of monitoring emerging trends and stuff like that. So it becomes a trend-based thing rather than a personal opinion thing.
Okay.
Which I think is quite interesting. I think might possibly work.
It's quite interesting, but I still think you're going to end up with grey.
You reckon?
Yep.
I don't know. Not when it comes to, not when, because don't forget, in the case of Drupal and the Drupal redesign.
What you're really saying here is that drowning out the strong voice means you can ignore people. So
yes.
It ends up as the designer doing the design on their own.
No, because you do pick up trends of things that constantly. I can associate this with, I can't say it otherwise, it's going to turn into a drinking game. I associate this with Get Sign Off, right? Because we've now got, shut up, we've got like 1,000+ beta testers testing it at the moment, and you get trends, you know. If one person writes back and says, yeah, I don't like this or whatever, you know, that is not enough in itself to justify a change, while in a design by committee environment it would do, you know, one person could force through. But when you're getting 10, 20 people saying the same thing, you know that there's a problem and it needs addressing, right? Makes sense. So next time you have a client wanting to do design by committee and you just can't shift them, I still think ideally, you know, one decision maker, by far the best. But in situations where you can't get that,
put it out to the whole company.
Try and encourage them to open it up to loads of people, like, for example, end users and stuff like that. Really turn it into this big thing and see what happens. It's worth trying.
Yeah.
You
cool.
Cynical git.
No. I'm not. Not at all.
See, I think it was good. And we're going to get Mark on the show at some point to talk about it in a bit more depth, when he's a bit further down the line, maybe.
Cool.
Okay. So next up, we're looking at the idea of self-directed projects. So when was the last time, Marcus, no, it's no point asking you. When was the last time you, dear listener, worked on a personal or internal project?
Actually, it wasn't that long ago.
Okay, why?
Well, it was that quite a long time
What's
ago.
What's that?
Actually.
What's that?
I
don't say Get Sign Off.
No. Personal, yeah?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Break
the Toad band website.
Yeah, I did that. I also did a junior football club site. That's still a few years ago. It's awful, but, you know, worked on it on my own. Did my thing.
I think we spend far too much time just working on paid client work, and that we probably need to be working on our personal and internal projects as well. And this has been recommended as a good idea.
I couldn't agree more, but today's pace of life and pressures on everyone stop this. And this is what's wrong with society today, he said.
What, has this suddenly turned into a Radio 4 programme?
He banged the table.
Yeah.
No, it is. I used to write bloody songs. I don't anymore. moan. Very rarely. Just haven't got the time.
You've got to make time for stuff like that, haven't you?
Well, yeah, but, you know, it keeps pushing. If you make time for stuff like that, then it automatically becomes available for work. Just, you know, kind of...
Yeah, but then that's about taking control of your life, I think. It's like, I have this thing that far too many people go through their lives when there's something they want to do, an idea they've got, or whatever it is, and they spend their whole time going, yeah, but... I'd like to do that, but there's always going to be a but. There's always going to be something that gets in the way. So you've got to make time. You just got to make it happen. And this is what Ideas on Ideas is talking about. This is what he's just posted. And what he did is he actually interviewed several designers about their kind of non-client work. And it became obvious as you read through this that self-directed projects offer real tangible benefits. And it's really quite interesting. You have to pick through it a little bit. He doesn't kind of summarize it all neatly. You just got these little clips from different designers and stuff. But some of the benefits he talked that kind of are in there are things like R&D.
You summarize it neatly.
I do. I summarize it neatly in the show notes. Yeah. But R&D, the chance to experiment with emerging technologies and techniques that otherwise you wouldn't get a chance to try out. Building visibility, that doing self-directed projects can offer you higher exposure online and people get attracted to your work and linked to it, etc. It proves capability, demonstrating your ability to deliver solutions that are not in your portfolio of client work. Increases your skills, allowing you to improve your skills in areas where you're weak or you know don't get to maintain those skills because clients aren't demanding them. It helps with team building. You know, if you're in a team environment, a sense of common purpose that you don't really often get in client work, really. I mean, kind of is common purpose. You are working on a project, but there's something different about doing your own project. It creates passion, allowing you to work on other projects, you know, generates an excitement that doesn't come from client projects, which are simply paying the bills sometimes, unless you're fortunate enough to be able to pick and choose your clients. And then finally, it's a bit of a release mechanism, chance to play, let off steam, not worry about the limitations, you know, that you have to live with client work.
There's one more.
What's that?
You might find a hit. You might find a business.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, this podcast was a personal project for me. And look how successful that's been.
Blimey. The most successful podcast of all time. No, that's not right, is it? Web design.
You can make up anything.
About nobody people can... in the Southern England called Paul's
podcast. Area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have to say, after years of spending my time on client work, I've now reached a point...
Well, you don't want to do it anymore.
Well, let's be honest. You and Chris have been very kind to me, and I don't have to do a lot of client work anymore, do I?
No.
I only manage... I'm involved with one client, really, at the moment, and that's it. And to be honest, it's really nice being able to play around with different things and experiment and stuff like that. And yes, I'm very spoiled. Thank you very much, Marcus.
My pleasure.
That almost sounded sincere.
It did. Yeah. Don't worry, you owe me.
I owe you. Cool, you should have seen the look on his face then. You owe me. Right, next one. Right, so back when I was a teenager...
I can't imagine you as a teenager.
I was an awful teenager.
Do you know what? I think it was Douglas Adams. No, Stephen Fry.
Right.
Who reckons that everyone has an optimum age.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, some people are perfect when they're 12.
Yeah.
Some people are when they're 40, etc. Others when they're 68. I don't know with you. I just can't imagine you as a teenager.
I was a bad teenager. I was kind of a nerdy goth.
A nerdy goth.
Can you imagine that?
Vaguely.
Very disturbing.
Not really. No, I can't imagine you as a teenager.
No, it didn't work.
Anyway,
so you got to bear with this, right? Because I'm starting from quite a funny space on this news story. It's not going to make a lot of sense to begin with. But back when I was a teenager, the government launched a massive campaign warning about the dangers of unprotected sex. You can see why I'm saying this is a funny starting point.
I'm not going to comment now.
And in particular, the risk of contracting HIV. Do you remember when AIDS first kind of came and there was a big campaign and they made a big thing out of it, wasn't it? So it was a very powerful campaign and led to kind of a whole generation growing up being much more aware of the risks of unprotected sex. However, the campaign wasn't followed through to the next generation. And then the rates of sexually transmitted diseases increased dramatically. And actually, we're beginning to see a new campaign start to appear now. You see them on TV.
Yeah.
So, strange analogy to bring up, but there is a link here. Bear with me. Because I believe that there's this danger of us doing the same thing with web accessibility, right? Mm. So many of us are kind of getting bored with all this talk about accessibility, right? It feels like we're covering the same old ground again and again. Okay, so why do we need another article about accessibility? You know, we've heard it all before, right? So you know, things like a list apart, you know, things like, you know, all the various magazine sites, all of the prominent bloggers, all of that kind of stuff. You know, they'll talk and talk and talk about a subject for a while it's trendy and it's in and it's very current, and then it kind of goes away. Mm-hmm. Now, the maybe, you know, that's great for some of us, and that's the case. But, sorry, Ed's just walked into the room, which is what's thrown me. you know, maybe that's the case with some of us, but not, that's not, you know, there are people coming into the industry for the first time all the time, you know, that are kind of just getting there. And they're subscribing to all of these different sites, and they're not seeing anything being written about accessibility because they're not going back through all the old archives. And even like on BOAG World, you know, people don't necessarily go back through all the shows and hear about this stuff. Grab a seat, Ed. So that's why I was really pleased. Here we go. We've finally got to the news story here.
Right,
sorry.
Yes. Okay.
That was why I was really pleased this week to see on the digital web website, an introduction to accessibility. Really cool. Really good article. You know, sure, we've heard it all before. We might be tempted not to bother looking at it. However, I really encourage you to take a look at this article. I guarantee that at least one of the pieces of advice you probably know but fail to implement because you've got lazy when it comes to standards and that kind of stuff. So that's my, yeah, really good. I'm really glad to see them republishing things like that.
Mm.
Was that a real stretch?
No. I was highly entertained there, Paul.
Talking about sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Things.
Okay, final news story of today. So I often talk about the need for inspiration on the web, and in fact, this week, guess who? Smashing Magazine have posted some incredibly inspiring graffiti that's worth a look at. But that's not what I want to talk about. I'm not interested in that. No more Smashing Magazine stories for me.
Yeah.
I'm purging.
You didn't need to put that bit in then, if that's not what this is about. Have to say Smashing Magazine, don't
I know.
You?
It's because Every I'm week. So lowbrow, that's
Come
the
thing. Come on, get on with it.
But yes, I do want to talk about being inspired by other websites. Does it always end up in plagiarism, right? This is the trouble, isn't it? That it's a kind of dangerous game. You start going to these CSS gallery sites, or perhaps this is just me. This could be just me, and I might be really embarrassing myself now. But you go to these CSS gallery sites looking for inspiration, okay?
What idea can I steal?
Well, no, that's fair enough. Going and looking at other sites, that's fair enough. But it's very tempting, isn't it, to just kind of lift in, you know, far too much at any one time.
Yeah.
Hey, back me up, it is, isn't it?
It is tricky, yeah.
Yes, there we go. So
I've got to stop you here because there's a relevance, what? There's a relation to music here. Because people who write music will listen to other music and go, I like that, and write a song around it.
Yeah.
And I decided last night, because Rick Wright from Pink Floyd died last week, which is very, very sad indeed. I'd watch The Making of Dark Side of the Moon, which is a fantastic program. Watch it again. I borrowed a DVD off a mate of mine. And there's this wonderful bit in it when he's just talking about a chord. And it's like, he's just, this chord, he's sat on the piano and he's right, going, that chord, I love that chord. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, I know where you're coming from on that. I love, there's certain chords that are just amazing. And he said, and that one, we were trying to get from sort of G back to E on Breathe, I think the song was. And normally you go ding, ding, ding. But I thought, suddenly occurred to me, there's that one from some jazz legend or whatever, some song, I can't remember the exact song. Pop it in there, and that's perfect. It's an exact copy of the chord in that song.
Yeah.
But the way he put it in, it certainly wasn't plagiarism at all. It just made the song.
You've just completely made the point I was going to.
Okay.
Because it's this whole business of, it's how much you take, isn't it, that matters. You know, if you're copying a big chunk of a song, then obviously that's plagiarism.
Yeah.
But taking little bits can be inspiration. So what? One way of kind of doing this from a design perspective is when you go and look at a website, instead of going, I'm going to do a screen capture of that and I'm going to dump it into my Flickr feed and, you know, and I'll keep it and I'll look at it later and be inspired by it. Don't do that, right? Because then the chances are that'll lead to, or could lead to, plagiarism if you're not careful. Instead, ask yourself, what is it about that design you really like? Is it the menu? Is it the way comments are dealt with? What is it? And then just do a screen capture of that little bit of the website rather than the whole thing. because then you're removing the temptation to kind of plagiarize too heavily. And this is what a designer in Portugal has done. Notice I say a designer from Portugal rather than trying to pronounce his name. And he's done screen grabs of loads of websites, and he's put them in, but he's just done little bits of the website and he's put them in his Flickr account. However, so instead of grabbing the entire website, he's just grabbed a fraction of the page. So he's removed that temptation to steal the whole design. So check out his feed on Flickr, because it is really good. Obviously, all the links we talked about in the news story so far are available at boagworld.com/podcast/136. I think that wraps up news.
Boagworld.com.
Okay, so we reached the feature section of our show today, which is called Overcoming Stagnation. So it's not that the show has become stagnated. We are rather discussing stagnation. I guess this kind of all comes from the fact that many of our websites have kind of finished those days of rapid growth, if you know what I mean, and slipped into a bit of stagnation that I guess as the industry's matured, things have changed. So how then can you kind of re-energize your site and start it growing again? So in a recent report I wrote for one of our largest clients, Wiltshire Farm Foods, I explained how most websites kind of pass through a series of common product stages, life cycle type scenarios, right? So in fact, I've identified four stages that most websites pass through. Well, four that I've made up anyway, that sound reasonable to me. So in the very early days of the web, okay, organizations started exploring what the internet could do for them, and they created a series of exploratory sites that were thrown out every couple of years and something new was done. And it was a kind of a very much a discovery phase. And, you know, they were trying to find their feet and work out how the internet fitted into their business. But it was a period of kind of low investment and slow growth, really, for most websites. Then at some point during that exploration phase, the kind of penny dropped for organizations, and they realized how the web could benefit their specific businesses. And at which point more substantial investment was made, and the sites improved dramatically and experienced a period of rapid growth. And I think we've kind of seen that over the last couple of years of really, you know, sites really grasping the web. And I'm not talking about the kind of cutting edge, you know, web-based businesses. I'm talking about the kind of stock and trade businesses, you know, that have websites. So they've finally realized how the web can integrate with their marketing strategy, and they've put some proper money into it. They've solved all their the major usability problems and that kind of stuff. But following that period of initial growth, they kind of, a lot of sites enter this period of stagnation. And this is because the kind of quick fixes have been done to their sites. So the obvious problems have been resolved. And so, when you solve those obvious problems, you get rapid growth. But once they're gone, then growth is going to slow down and things are going to, you know, stagnate a little bit. And often mistakes are made in that period of stagnation. But the final stage that hopefully you can reach is kind of overcoming those challenges of stagnation, and you can enter a period of kind of gradual but steady growth. And this is a kind of maturity stage. And this is characterized by kind of continual incremental changes to your site, which kind of constantly stimulate growth. And it's kind of easy to generate rapid growth in the early stages of a website. There's so many obvious problems to fix, you know, that you can make big impacts with really little effort. However, what happens once that stage is over? You know, how do you help clients that there aren't massive obvious problems that need resolving? You know, what do you do when, you know, they ask you to come in and help their businesses? What if you are a website owner, how do you get out of that and overcome that period of stagnation? I think the first thing to say about stagnation is not an entirely negative period. Although it consists of kind of slower growth, it does not mean necessarily a decline. However, what is negative about stagnation is that it generates fear. It generates a fear that growth is going to turn into decline, a fear that your competition is going to catch you up, and a fear of losing customer loyalty. Okay? And that these fears often lead to knee-jerk reactions that are detrimental to your website. So this mentality, for example, manifests itself in two particular reactions, this fear mentality. The first is it leads to panic decision making, right? Something has to be done, and it has to be done now kind of attitude. Second, it leads to the creation of additional features. And these kind of two reactions go hand in hand, really. So as growth slows, organisations seek a way to maintain the momentum that they did have. And one source they turn to is user feedback. However, instead of kind of considering the impact of suggestions on the overall usability of the site, they instead grasp hold of it as, this is something we can do, therefore we must do it immediately. And this kind of leads to feature creep and to complexity in your site. And before long, that kind of vision that you had for your site is lost, and the organization is becoming reactive. That as soon as a user asks for something, you just give it to them kind of attitude. So this kind of reactive, fear-based mentality can be overcome in three ways, all right? One is going back to basics. Step back occasionally and ask yourself two questions. Why does your site exist and who is it aimed at? So much time can be spent on troubleshooting, adding features and responding to requests that focus is lost. And it's easy to spend time placating the requests of a vocal minority while damaging the usability for the majority.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing you can do is pause and evaluate. Every time you receive criticism, it's important to pause before responding to that criticism, right? And you need to ask yourself some questions. Who is it that's criticizing, right? Are they an important segment of your audience? And how many of the same comment are you receiving? You know, if it's just one individual, then you can't put too much store by it. But if lots of people are criticizing it, then you need to put more store by it. Is it a serious criticism or is it a mild inconvenience? You know, what are the ramifications to fixing the problem? Who else will be affected and in what ways? The danger is that you rush into fixing a problem and thereby create more. The third way you can overcome this kind of fear mentality or reactionary mentality is to simplify. There's a belief that growth is maintained by giving the users more. However, often the opposite can be true. Look to solve problems and increase growth by simplifying your site, not by adding more features. So it's the area of simplicity really that I kind of want to home in on, because I think that's the one where we've got most to learn. Right. There are two reasons why simplicity is important. It simplifies, simplicity sells, okay, increases sales, and users have limited intelligence. So
attention.
That was Freudian.
Fantastic.
Oh dear.
You were dealing with lots of thick people.
Yes. No.
So make it easy for them.
Limited attention.
See, I was paying attention there.
There we go.
Yeah, I was paying attention.
I was impressed. So let's look at simplicity sells, moving away from limited intelligence.
Right. I'm going to listen to the rest of this now.
Looking for other fool. Oh yes, mistakes on my part. So one of the most popular, successful products of our time is the iPod. And yet, in most ways, it's inferior to its competition. It's more expensive, it has inferior technology, and offers less features than the majority.
How did they do that?
Exactly. Magic.
It's not magic. It's because it looks nice.
Yes. That's a big part of it, definitely. But the reason it came to dominate the market is because it's simple and easy to use and looks attractive.
Yep.
This simplicity has become the trademark of Apple products. With it comes a kind of newfound growth for the company. Before the iPod, you know, was around, and before Steve Jobs came back, you know, Apple was struggling.
Yeah,
but Steve kind of grasped this concept of simplicity and aesthetics and really kind of did it incredibly well. There are examples online too, as well. You know, in the early years of the web, Yahoo dominated search listings. However, as the web grew, the site struggled to adapt and it became complex and hard to use. It was therefore not surprising that the minimalist interface of Google came as a breath of fresh air and quickly supplanted Yahoo's dominance. You know, so simplicity is incredibly important. Google then went on to apply the same simplistic approach to online advertising, and they swept aside traditional banner advertising with its kind of complex, you know, payment models and all of that kind of stuff, and replaced it with a simpler text advert accompanied by easy-to-use administrative system that allowed anyone to run ad campaigns. The majority of users will select simplicity over functionality. Limited intelligence. Limited attention. Well, perhaps the two are interlinked, I don't know. So we tend to forget that we've got limited capability to process information.
This is the same thing.
It is, really. To some degree, it is intelligence. We're only able to process about 6 or 7 pieces of information simultaneously. So that's why
that
when
many.
Apparently. That's why when we first learn to drive, we find it so difficult, okay? Because when you first learn to drive, you have to do a lot more than 6 or 7 things simultaneously when you take into account looking in a mirror and steering and, you know, clutch and brakes and all the other things. It's not until those things become, like, subconscious and we do them instinctively that actually we find driving easy. Mm. So if we translate this principle to the web, it becomes apparent why web pages can be so overwhelming. There's simply too much going on. And one technique is to reduce complexity is to assign users' attention points to a page. Now, I've talked about this before, but I make no apologies for doing it again. All right? So, for example, let's say you have 15 points of user attention to spend. Each time you add an item to a page, it costs 1 point of attention. If you want something to stand out, you need to give it more points. And this demonstrates that you need to reduce the number of elements or you end up with a page that lacks focus and is too thinly spread. And this kind of is perfectly demonstrated by the difference between the Yahoo and the Google home pages. You know, when you compare Google, it's obvious that Yahoo is demanding too much of its users and spreading their attention too thinly. While Google is all about the search box and they've spent all their attention points, so to speak, on the search box. Mm. By having so much content on the Yahoo homepage and not emphasizing any particular element, the whole page lacks definition. It basically becomes a big blur. And they need to go in and prioritize and simplify their content. To move a website from stagnation to maturity, we need to simplify. And this involves some difficult choices. And simplifying is hard for two reasons. Firstly, it's hard to remove functionality once you've paid for it and invested in creating it. And secondly, it's hard to remove functionality that people use. Nevertheless, it's necessary. When it comes to the mental barrier of removing functionality that you've already paid for, you need to recognize that actually it's still costing you money. All right? Because every time the complexity of that functionality undermines the user experience, it's potentially driving users away and reducing profits. Also, just because some users are using a piece of functionality does not mean that you should keep it. Every piece of functionality on your website is probably used by somebody sometime. The question is, how much is it used and how badly does it overcomplicate the user experience for everybody else? So there you go. There's a few thoughts on kind of stagnation and simplicity and how to move out of it. And I'd really encourage you to look at the sites you're involved in and go through, you know, item by item on the pages and say, can I remove that piece of functionality? Can that link be removed? Can that piece of content be simplified? Always push to simplify it. And maybe in a future episode, we'll get into how you go about simplifying it, because there are 3 ways to simplify. You delete, you hide, or you shrink. But I'll save that for another time.
Good article, Paul.
Oh, good. I'm glad you approved.
I like that one.
Okay, let's move on to have our little chat with Ed. Birdworld.com. Okay, so as you gathered from the new segment of the show, Ed has come to join us. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
Good to see you again. Been a while since we've had you on the show.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yes.
Good to be back.
You've been busy upstairs working hard.
I have indeed.
So, obviously, Ed is one of the designers at Headscape, and I wanted him on the show. And I don't know whether it really counts as listener feedback if it's Ed. I don't think this really kind of fits, does it? I'm looking at Marcus because he ain't got a mic. It's great. Marcus can't say anything. He's completely removed because Ed has his mic. So Ed showed me a cool little CSS technique. Now, normally we don't kind of cover CSS techniques on the show because basically they don't work very well as an audio podcast. However, this is a cool little technique and I wanted to show it off. Now, the first thing to say, right, is this is inevitable. This always happens, isn't it? That so Ed came up with this technique and he posted it on the Boag World website.
So I can't talk.
You can't talk. Shut up, Marcus.
I can't, really loud.
Oh, shut up. So we posted it on the website, and we immediately discovered other people had already done it, didn't we, Ed?
Yeah, I did suspect that.
Yeah. But nevertheless, it's a really cool technique, and it's worth talking about.
Yeah, I think so. The interesting thing about when I came up with it was I was working abroad, and didn't have any internet access.
Ah, so you couldn't actually check.
No, so I was kind of forced to come up with one. And,
That's interesting. I mean, what I quite like about it, basically to explain the technique, is it's really good for people that are coming from table-based design. Because in table-based design, this was deadly easy, wasn't it?
Yeah, which makes it something clients always ask for.
Exactly. So, do you want to briefly explain what it is that you've come up with?
Yeah, sure. Basically, it's a way of attaching the footer to the bottom of the browser window, but not overlaying it over the content.
So basically, the footer pushes down if the page is longer than a single... Yeah.
But if you're on a page with little or no content, the footer still stays at the bottom of the browser window, not leaving you loads of ugly space below it.
Okay. So obviously, if you want to check this out, you can do so at bowingworld.com/podcast/136. There are a couple of other versions. You found, I mean, there is one that's a CSS-only version, but you found one that was a JavaScript version as well.
Yeah, I was aware of Sean Inman doing it a few years ago. Mm. I know he used JavaScript, but yeah, apparently there's another CSS version as well.
Which seems to work in a very similar way. So do you want to explain how it works, you know, roughly the kind of way you go about doing this?
Sure. Basically, you've got to define the height of the page. Which normally, everything kind of piles up and there's no absolute height defined, whereas this time we've measured the page and then you pop the footer underneath.
Right, and you set the height basically as 100%, you know, 100% is what you're doing, which most of the time is done as a minimum height, except for
in decent browsers. It's a minimum height, and then any content within it that's higher than the browser will obviously push it out.
Okay, so I mean it creates a useful technique that replicates what we've been able to do in tables for a long, long time. I mean, just to look through the CSS, now this is really difficult. I don't know whether this is going to work, but people have been asking to kind of look at some CSS and HTML in the show, so we'll give it a go. If you're listening to this, write in and say whether this makes no sense whatsoever on an audio podcast, because I'm not convinced it will, but you've got to give these things a go. So the HTML, basically your HTML looks very basic here. It's a container with a content div and a footer div. That's the best way to describe it,
nice,
I think.
Nice and simple.
So when it comes to the CSS, what are you doing here? You're basically setting the margin and padding to zero on the body.
Yeah, just a universal reset thing, just to tidy up, stop things breaking.
Yeah, sure. And then what are you doing after that?
Then basically you've got to define the container, containing the content and the footer, as a block and setting a minimum height of 100%.
Okay. And you've put position absolute on that as well.
I have. That was mainly a workaround for IE6.
Oh, okay. So that could have been shoved off in the IE6.
It could. It just didn't seem to break anything. And you seemed to be able to do everything you wanted, yeah.
So. Okay. Then on the content block of this, which is obviously where the majority of people's content's gone, you've put a display block and a margin bottom 3Ms. No, the 3Ms, I presume, is the height of the footer.
Yeah, you'd have to change that depending on how high your footer was.
Sure. Then the footer itself is, again, you've positioned absolute, you've put a display block on it. Why are the display blocks needed?
Remember. Yeah. Probably to get them to go the full width of the page or something.
Okay. Then because it's position absolute, you set it at the bottom, then you've put a height of 3Ms on it. Yeah, that will make sense. Now, the body and the container, you forced a height of 100%, and that's just so that, I mean, the body is always a height of 100%, isn't it? Or is it not? No, it's not, is it?
It's the height of the content, yeah.
Right, which is why you need to do it in that way.
Yeah.
And then you've got a conditional conditional comment for IE, because IE is a pain in the arse, which, as I remember, basically just set, you had to set the height of the, what was it that you needed to
I've
know?
I've replaced the min height with just the height, I think.
Yeah, that was it, because IE6 doesn't recognise min height. That's cool. So are there any kind of known issues about this that we need to be aware of?
As you might expect, only in IE6. If you've got any extra containers before you get to the content and the footer,
right?
So more than one around it, you need to also set them to height 100%, I think.
Okay.
Just because it doesn't seem to inherit like it should.
Right. I mean, people found a few little, you know, niggly things, especially if you're doing other absolute positioning stuff within it and that kind of stuff.
So it is one of those things where you'll have to be a bit careful with it, I think. But it's...
So So it's a nice little technique. So this was a bit of an experiment, really, you know, actually discussing some real HTML and CSS. So let us know whether it's worked or not. If it doesn't, we won't do it again. But you can at least go and check out the blog post over at boagworld.com. Thanks, Ed. Really all appreciate right. you coming on the show.
Good
and
to be back.
We'll get you on again before too long.
Boagworld.com.
Well, that was riveting.
Yeah, that. yes, it was useful. If you're a web designer, it's useful. Whether it works on an audio podcast, I've no idea.
We'll find it. Yeah, that's true. It's just not something I'm interested in, so.
No. You probably wouldn't have even tried to follow that, what we were talking about. That's the thing.
No. There were words coming out, but they didn't mean anything to me.
We might discover that really it's all we need to say on the show is we've posted a blog on some CSS and HTML, go look at it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was worth a try. After 136 episodes, if we can't try something new now, we never will be able to. So there we go. So that about wraps up today's show, except for obviously Marcus's wonderful joke that no doubt he's going to tell us right now.
Yeah, this is from Jennifer in New York. Thank you very much, Jennifer.
Jennifer. New York, eh? Hey, yeah. I'm going there soon. Perhaps you'll to meet up, Jennifer.
Jennifer Walford.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's interesting that she hasn't emailed me asking. There's a couple of people have suggested meeting up, but obviously Jennifer doesn't really want to meet me.
Yeah, she's got a picture of you as a, what was it, goth nerd or something.
Goth nerd now. That's it, isn't it? I'm forever painted. Go on then, take
okay, here we go. There was a man who'd worked all his life, had saved all of his money, and was a real miser when it came to his money. Just before he died, he said to his wife, "When I die, I want you to take all my money and put it in the casket with me. I want to take my money to the afterlife with me." So he got his wife to promise him with all her heart that when he died, she would put all the money into the casket with him. Well, he died. He was stretched out in the casket. His wife was sitting there, dressed in black, and her friend was sitting next to her. When they finished the ceremony, and just before the undertakers got ready to close the casket, the wife said, "Wait just a moment." She said she had a small metal box with her. She came over with the box and put it in the casket. Then the undertakers locked the casket down and they rolled it away. So her friend said, "I know you're not foolish enough to put all that money in there with your husband." The loyal wife replied, "Listen, I'm a Christian. I cannot go back on my word. I promised him that I was going to put the money in the casket with him." "You mean to tell me you put that money in the casket with him?" "I sure did," said the wife. "I got it all together, put it into my account and wrote him a check. If he can cash it, then he can spend it." Which is kind of an all right joke.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It'll do.
Unless we go back to the sort of, I've got loads of those Tommy Cooper ones.
No.
And they'll be coming back out next week unless you send me some better ones.
Send some jokes at marcus@boagworld.com. And don't forget to check out our forum and, I don't know, everything else it's I'm supposed stuff. To be pimping. Everything that I pimp. Go and do it all. Sign up. Pay money for Get Sign Off and buy the website owner's manual. And I've
say goodbye now, Paul. And we started off so cheery and happy.
Oh, I'm still happy. I've just lost my enthusiasm for pimping. I've run out of pimp power.
Stop now.
Okay, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, world of Boag.
It's like being on David Letterman.
Boag World! Boag World!
Or join our forum at